Welcome to The Learning Curve, a show about helping kids get good grades in school and succeed in life. The Learning Curve is for parents, teachers, and students, because all of life is a learning curve, and you'll succeed to the extent that you can learn easily. Now, here's your hosts, the authors of How to Learn, How to Teach, Overcoming the Seven Barriers to Comprehension, Roger and Virginia.
Today we're going to introduce you to some exercises that you can use with your children in order to help them read more easily. And we have the return of Jeffrey Flom. Jeffrey is a 34-year veteran in the New York City educational school system, and he is the author of the book Motivating Teen and Preteen Readers, How Teachers and Parents Can Lead the Way. I see in your book, or your work notes here, Jeffrey, that you've been cited in various programs, one of which is the Educational Resource Information Center for Teachers at Columbia University. What was the basis of the use of your material at their center?
A bunch of things there, my writing programs, poetry programs, and I was invited Columbia Teachers College to send my material to Eric. It's posted on their website, which is humongous.
So this is a major resource for teachers in the various educational systems.
Oh yeah, Eric is, yes, yeah. You can get many lessons, lessons that have been developed by teachers across the U.S.
Now, in reading your material, I keep coming across this issue of the diverse questions and diverse question strategies that you use as techniques to develop and very much bring about the prerequisite fundamental reading and learning skills that are critical for kids. Can you explain that for the parents so they could use it with their children?
There are 1,000 questions, over 1,000 questions, and just brainstormed these questions over a period of time. There are questions on common everyday reading experiences, past reading experiences, the reading process, writing, creativity, imagination, and you want to, you know, with kids you want to mix it up and kind of work in every area, every aspect of that's involved in the reading process, and be able to draw out responses from the kids with the various tools or the prerequisite fundamental skills that I spoke about, reflection and so on and so forth. But I want them to be able to look back and see the mind pictures, memories, experiences from the past. You know, a lot of times I come off, you know, way too academic, but Roger, these are common sense skills, abilities that we all have, that we all do. We might think about things and, or if you really want to get heavy, contemplate. And I think that is important to get them into deeper reading, which is another jargon word that's thrown about now.
Well, you actually raise an important point there, and that is that what you're doing is facilitating and having the child exercise some of their natural abilities. And if you do this on a knowing basis, of course, you end up with the ability being more powerfully used and more knowingly used. And that's really a big plus. Can you give us an example of some of the questions that you use or that you've got in your book that our listening parents can begin to contemplate and use with their kids?
Four books of questions, books 1 through 4, and they go from more basic to the more advanced questions. By the time you get to book 4, I call them AP questions, advanced placement questions, and I have other questions called good for dudes questions, just kind of bring it into modern times and more contemporary. So just with that understanding in mind, let me see here. I have questions from book 1. Do you read poetry on your own? Why or why not? Recall a book you read with ease. What made it so easy? Why read magazines? Describe a book, fiction or nonfiction, that shocked you. Did you ever reread a baby book? What's that like? Do you remember reading a poem that rocked your world? What was it about? Describe a mind picture and how it affected you.
That's a good question. That would really open them up a little bit.
Think of a word that warms your heart. Describe how it affects you. Pictures, feelings, thoughts. Think of a word that brings up deep feelings and thoughts. Describe what happens inside.
So what's been your experience when you're asking children those kinds of questions? We're talking about kids at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old?
Fourth grade, I'd say 9, 10, 11. I don't have certain responses here now, but particularly the early reading experiences, like one of the questions was describe reading a book with a parent or one of the earliest books you read with an adult. And the detail, 10, 11 years old, going back to like 6 years old, the detail and what they said about these experiences amazed the rest of the kids listening as well to see what their friends have gone through.
That's interesting. So really, when a parent applies this knowledge and these questions with their child, they should not be expecting a child-like answer, but a rather adult, mature kind of answer as the experience that the kid is expressing.
The parent has to realize that. In the beginning, the responses might be light and short, and that's as their job as a discussion leader is to open that response up and dig deeper into a superficial answer and get them thinking, you know, more about what they experienced, getting them into the experience more.
How do the skills of visualization and concentration, for example, affect the reading process or motivation and comprehension of the child?
Started doing visualization in the 70s, in the early 70s, called mind pictures. That's the phrase I use. A picture's worth 1,000 words, you know, but this one's inside. That's what you got to get them to do. Find these pictures with their inner eye. Even before visualization, you have to have their attention and you have to have their concentration. Concentration is not dealt with. I mean, you got so many kids with ADD or just fragmented consciousness that to get them in the room with you and concentrating and being in the same game.
And directing their attention where it needs to be rather than scattered.
Right.
Yeah, that is interesting. And can parents teach these skills to their children, do you feel?
Yes. In the how-to sections, I give model answers and stuff for the various visualizations that, you know, you're trying to get from your child. Yeah, I give sample responses, yes.
When parents are working with their children, giving them a question, first of all, if you've got more than one child, it might be a good exercise, I suppose, to have all of your children being given the same question and then sharing their responses. But does the parent also share their response to the question?
Yes, yeah, that, you know, especially, Virginia, at the time, let's say the child is coming up with nothing. They can't answer the question, even if, assuming they understand the question, they're coming up with zero. Then the parent can model their answer. You know, this is what happened to me. Also, as I say throughout the book, when you're going through these, you know, 8,000 questions here, you should answer them mentally. Just quick thing, you know, here's the question, how would I respond to that? Just to give you a little framework of where the kids might be coming from when they respond to the question.
Are there any, or what are the prerequisites, fundamental skills for learning or learning how to learn?
Concentration, reflection, creative thinking, critical thinking, analysis, analyzing things, synthesizing, putting them back together. And I go in my classes with contemplation, taking it a step further and letting them get into some deeper thought on certain issues.
That's good, because I was also reflecting on some of your earlier answers apropos visualization and how this actually gives the child just not just a picture, but actually an experiential sensation of all the moods and emotions that are and can be involved with these pictures. And
yes.
We find that's quite important as well, because there they get their pleasures.
You know, it's all about sensations, and they're not using their senses and not picking up sensually what a writer is communicating. They're not going to enjoy reading at all.
Right. Becomes a rather bland, lifeless kind of a
mental exercise. It falls real flat.
Would you recommend that a parent might want to try and start a book club with their child? In other words, their child, maybe a neighbor's child, and maybe one of their friends, something like that, and that would get the child reading more and discussing the books?
Absolutely. Just using motivating teen and preaching readers by just having a round table, a handful of kids, give them a question. They can email the questions and then meet as a group or definitely as a book club, group. Yeah, that's I think that's great for homeschooling parent teachers, definitely, get their kids with other kids and dealing with reading. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
So then homeschooling parents would most definitely be able to use your book.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things, in terms of what I was thinking about a program for homeschoolers, and they want and need of these type of materials. I thought this project is perfect for them.
That is a good point, Jeffrey. I'm just looking here at the book again as you were chatting there, and it seems as though it's predominantly about motivating adolescents to read. Of course, my attention tends to be more on the rather younger brigade of kids as they're getting into it. But looking at the adolescent population in that age group, why is it so important at this time for getting these adolescents involved in reading?
Well, one of the big reasons is the testing situation. The obsession now with testing and test scores, test prepping, drill and kill. I think that you're turning a lot of kids off to reading because all it becomes is a test score. And, you want to get their attention back, and you have a lot of competition for reading now. Not like when we grew up. We didn't have all these, all the electro-techno world, social media, internet, things that are out there.
It's a soundbite universe. There's no attention span involved.
When I was in front of the room, Roger, I had to have, 100% attention, but I didn't want to demand it. I wanted it to come from inside them, and it goes back to, everything that I developed as coming from an internal motivation and from imagination, mind, and spirit.
So how often would you, or at what rate would you recommend teachers and parents using these questions? Once a week, once a day, how often?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I have to keep this really short in terms of a classroom lesson because teachers now in the New York City DOE, they're under tremendous pressure. I think their day is written out from, 8 in the morning to 3. You have to keep it short. The mini lesson, that's why I call it a mini lesson, because you can do this easily for 45 minutes and keep the kids awake. but I would say if they can get in a classroom situation, 4th, 5th, or 6th, 7th, 8th, or even 9th, if they can get in questions 2 or 3 times a week, get a total of 100 questions in a year, that's great. I still think that's a good enough block of questions to get them thinking about things. At home, it's different. Parent has, some more time, I think, in comparison to a classroom teacher. So they can afford to ask maybe 2 or 3 questions at a shot, a couple of times a week, or again, even once a week, Virginia. As long as there's consistency, that's the key.
Is this something that a teacher might assign as a homework question, or would you really want to have the kids in the classroom with you so that you can make sure they're really concentrating on answering the question and not doing something else?
Yeah, good question. I wouldn't. I say in the book you can start assigning homework questions after, let's say, you've done 50 questions in the classroom. Because the tendency is, when I see homework, it ain't as good as the classroom work. But I remind them, hey, whatever you do at home, just pretend you're still in the classroom, only at home, and I want the same effort and energy from those responses. But if the kids are not coming up with, they're not working as hard at home, I would stop the homework questions and just keep it within the class. But ideally, Virginia, if this is working, they're going to want to answer the questions at home with the same energy that they do in the room.
Yes, it sounds like once they get into it, they really will get into it.
Right, yes.
So your difficulties that you were explaining with the public school system, it sounds like your particular way of teaching this would actually do better in a charter school or an alternative school where they're, granted they're still testing, but their day is not so defined by public school as it is in public school. Would you agree?
Yeah, well, first of all, charter schools, I think the day is longer than the public school. I don't think it matters. From what I've read about the missions and values of charter schools, it's the same thing, Virginia, as anybody, any classroom teacher that's a decent, not saying an all-star teacher, but a decent teacher would do. All their, I've read their, like I said, their missions. In my old school, PS16, there's a charter school. It's a 5-floor building, and now they're on the 5th and 4th floor, and they're going down lower. I hope my school stays intact, and I think it will. I think that great for charter schools, definitely be just as good for a public or alternative school.
I have a question here regarding what's in your book, Jeffrey. You have many questions on words, power of words. Can you give us some examples or sample word or word activity type question?
Check it out. Read them, visualize them, and write descriptions to make the mind pictures pop out. Sunflower forest, lonely girl, peace train. Broken glass, puffy clouds, angry eyes. And basically, I developed the concept of it is a picture, a feeling, and a thought, experience as well, to get at the to draw out the meaning of the word and the depth of the word, to get them into words, and that words are not just black on white.
And they actually experience the impact of the concept behind the word.
Yes.
Which of course the words simply represent concepts.
Start out with the word activities. I start out with single words, nouns, adjectives, verbs, whatever, mm-hmm. and then go on to like a phrase, like I just gave you here, and then I do 2-word sentences and 4-word, 6-word, step by step. And what I found when I give them what I call absurd sentences, like trees dance, birds walk, or things like that. When any kind of absurdity or ridiculousness or silliness, they get off on right away, because the minute I say it, they visualize the absurd image and they get into it and stuff. That going from the real to the surreal makes a big difference too with the kids, and they get to see what their imagination and mind can do.
Yes, that sort of answers the next question I had, which I was going to be asking you for your view on why these mini word workouts, why are they relevant to kids in school?
Vocabulary and spelling words, to get the three-dimensional aspects of words to get through to the motivation.
And have them actually experience the emotional impact and the whole hologram of it.
Right, yes,
That's good, I like that.
So it sounds like you actually apply two of the principles in our book. One is making the words relevant to them. In other words, if they can attach their own pictures to the words, mm-hmm. it becomes relevant to them.
Right.
But also the way that you introduce the questions, you say you go from reality to the surreal,
mm-hmm.
that is a gradient on which you take them through. So you take them through, you give them something easy to start out with,
mm-hmm.
to get them working, to get their mind working, and then you progressively take them into something that's might be a bit more difficult. So.
Right.
Very nice.
I really am impressed, Jeffrey, I must tell you, by the way in which you effectively develop the child's abilities and capacities to address what and use what they're learning, and the skills of handling their mind in this manner. That's really good. I notice also here that there are some books that might be a little difficult for some educators and parents for them to master. So what are the points that they would have to master to make the project work that's based on your book?
The key is the discussion, you know. Teachers, thinking on your feet, being spontaneous, and, you know, being able to make up questions is not an easy process. I've had literacy coaches tell me and reading coordinators tell me that the reason why they like this book, I'm giving them questions to ask kids that are, you know, relevant and get them thinking and motivated.
That's interesting, the way you put that. So this is actually provides a quiver full of arrows that can be used in the game of getting the kids engaged and mm-hmm. opened up and enlivened and really participating in their education and winning at it.
I really get into the how to expand the questions and the responses. That's gone into in detail. And again, look, a lot of these things are not always the easiest to read, but learning how to be a discussion leader it ain't easy. And that's the key for, you know, I'm sure when parents look at this, not homeschoolers, because I think they have more practice and experience in it, but parents just wanting to enrich their kids. You know, they say, I don't know if I can do this, but I think I'm giving them, the book is user-friendly, and I'm giving them a lot of fuel for their own imagination to get them thinking. They're just as much as part of the process as the kids are. It's not just the kids. It's the parents and teachers as well.
Yes, I can really see this book being of tremendous value to parents who wish to and should, by the way, participate in their kids' education as great backup to what's going on in school. So for those you parents who have kids in regular school, I think, honestly, that this is a book you should have so you can help kids win at the regular school system.
Yes, I definitely see this as something parents can use during the summer when the kids are off. It keeps them engaged, it keeps them thinking, it keeps them reading, it keeps them writing. And they keep their skills rather than losing them and going back, you know, going back two steps, and then when they go back to school, they're two steps behind where they left.
You know, Virginia, you just said a key word that we haven't really gotten into because not really the issue, is the writing aspect. And that, you know, this is not just, you know, writing an answer. This is writing and getting into your own writing processes. And, you know, if the ultimate aim of this book is to get kids into their reading process and motivation, if it really works, it'll work back to writing and, you know, improving their writing skills. It's the reading-writing connection, as they call it. That's the jargon. And the writing-reading connection when it works backwards into reading.
Jeffrey, I think that's going to be a wonderful topic for another program with you. We've been listening to Jeffrey Flom, who is the author of Motivating Teen and Preteen Readers, How Teachers and Parents Can Lead the Way. It's a really important book, which I think all parents and teachers should read, because it's going to be good for them. Jeffrey, thanks very, very much for being with us here on The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. What you've had to say to us today is really valuable stuff for our listeners.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks, Virginia. Thanks for having me and giving me a voice to discuss the book. Thank you.
Well, it's an important subject, and we're delighted to be able to bring such value as you are making available to parents, to those parents.
Thanks for listening to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. For more information on the subjects covered during the show, visit howtolearneasily.com or send an email to questions@howtolearneasily.com.